Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'm with Henry and Josh as usual. Thank you for joining us. And for the first time in four games, you are joining us after a victory. Not just a victory, but a victory against a team that hadn't lost in 13 games. That's unbelievable. It's like a genuine spring miracle. I was actually with my housemates last night, and they're not into football at all. And they were like, Andy, you seem different tonight. Like, why are you happier? Like, and it's basically their point was, for the last 2 weeks, you've been a Mardy sod. And now I'm really happy because Arsenal have finally won a game. Henry, are you in the same joyous mood?
Yeah, it was actually great to go out on Twitter and see all of these positive comments rather than all this hate. I mean, there was still this this acknowledgement of it doesn't change anything in terms of the managerial situation, but at least there was this acknowledgement of we actually played well, so let's enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, and it was in the most important competition of this season as well. So there's that as well. And really, the Europa League should still be something that Arsenal should be wanting to win. So any game that they are successful in is good for us. Were you as overjoyed with the performance, Josh? I assume you were.
Yes, I was telling Henry before we started the show, I was telling people, just random people, like, Arsenal won. Don't you understand? They won. Nobody seemed to care as much as I did, but that's okay because they won and that's all that matters.
No, I'm not that surprised that they didn't care as much as you did, but but there we go. I know we wanted to start because we usually look at the Twitter questions at the end and sometimes we've answered them. So this week we are going to start with the Twitter questions, which is always a nice throwback. So, Henry, do you want to present them, or do you want me to?
I'm happy to present them. I know Josh has gone after a couple of them already. all of the questions related to Granit Xhaka, he's gone after immediately. Super Ace BK asked, why did Xhaka try that rocket at the end, though? Terrible. To which Josh replied with a Justin Timberlake gif of Justin Timberlake staring blankly or directly into the soul said individual.
Did you see the video of it was like a 6 second clip of Xhaka took the shot, then Wenger has to go at him, then Xhaka kind of rolls his eyes and goes, oh, fuck off. and then Ramsey chuckles.
I did see that.
That was so
but
funny.
The thing is, they cut off right as he was saying F off.
Yeah. Because in fairness, Wenger is completely right. Like, it was ridiculous. But it was quite funny to see Xhaka just go, oh, piss off.
I mean, that was one of the few times Granit Xhaka started on someone. I was like, right, Granit, go for it. Say it just a second. Go for it. You've got all the backup you need. Just go.
I think he was just surprised that Wenger was actually doing something on the sidelines.
I've seen no photo evidence of him actually standing on the sidelines yet, except for that video. But gosh, apparently he was on the sidelines quite often. But no, but Harry Austin, who does some graphics for us, and we should give a shout out to him while we can. He acknowledges the fact that Xhaka was great, and then quickly tags Josh in it. Then another one of our contributors, Daniel Filton, he asks whether Callum Chambers could see more time at right back, considering Bellerin's injury and how well he played yesterday. What do you think about that?
I would say absolutely, because I mean, we've been talking all season about how Bellerin hasn't been good enough, but there's been no challenge to him. And, you know, I'm not keen on throwing Chambers back in there just because we don't have anyone else and because I think he's a center back, but I mean, from what I've seen of him at right back, it's not like his lack of speed is hurting us. I mean, against Brighton, I guess he was caught out a little bit, but it was never something that was irreparable. And he does such a good job not getting faked out, not falling for fancy footwork, that I don't see why he wouldn't get more time there. I actually want to see Bellerin have to get the job back from him now.
I agree in terms of the Brighton. I thought he was beaten a couple of times, but for the most part, I thought it was, as I said in the last episode, more so us chasing the game and having to leave all these spaces because we were pushing forward in search of goals. What do you think, Andy?
I'm not quite as enamoured with his performance. I thought he was fine. Mm. I thought he played out of position. I thought he defended well. He obviously gave the ball away cheaply, didn't he, when Cutrone hit it into the near post. And I thought it was perfectly good, and he was probably as good as Bellerin has been this season. And if you need him to play right back for a few weeks, then that's fine. He can play there. But if you're thinking that suddenly Chambers is going to be your starting right back for the next few months, then I'd be a bit nervous about that. And I'd still like to see the position addressed in the summer, really. I thought he was perfectly adequate, but nothing more.
I thought he was very good, but I do agree with you that this isn't a solution to right back, because he's not a right back, and it would be a crime to him to make him play right back. That said, he did a lot of things really well. I mean, when you talk about how bad we are on set pieces and winning the ball in the air, he won 8 aerial duels compared to AC Milan. Their entire back line won only 9 combined. So that's always been a perk in Callum Chambers' game, and you're getting that out of right back, which, I mean, make of it what you will, it's not his position, but it's still a nice little added benefit to get from him being on the pitch.
No, it does. It does give you essentially a third centre half from set pieces to defend, and if you've also got, say, kind of Granit Xhaka and Danny Welbeck and a Kolasinac at left back, then actually it does make you a bigger team. So, particularly given Arsenal's normal vulnerabilities from corners and free kicks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, every Ospina goal kick went towards Callum Chambers. I thought, once again, he was...
Yeah, I noticed that.
Every time... I remember one occasion, as you said, where he should have put the ball out of play, but instead he tried to clear up the line and it was a poor clearance. But other than that, I thought he was very good on the ball once again. I don't think he was fantastic. I'd give him a 7 out of 10 in the context of things. But I thought, I agree in terms of he's not someone who I would have replaced Bellerin. Play there for a couple of weeks, fine. Address the issue in the summer, because I see him as a fantastic distributor from the centre-back position. And he's one of my personal favourites, and I was quite vocal about his performance on Twitter last night, but upon reflection, maybe I was a little too excited. I thought he was solid, not spectacular. Josh.
You weren't too excited. It was a really, really, really good performance from him. He had 2 mistakes. Both of them were the same kind of thing where he should have put it out and he tried to clear it up the line and didn't go very far. That was it. He was very, very... Having had to watch Bellerin all year, Chambers didn't lack in anything that Bellerin brought. I mean, Bellerin's been burnt before, too, because he gets too far forward. Chambers was actually very solid over the ball, especially whenever he got forward, which is what I was looking for, because that's the one thing I think Bellerin has the upper hand in. But he had really good deliveries. I mean, none of them ever really amounted to anything, but neither do Bellerin's. They still have, to me, it looked like they had very similar ability to deliver the ball into the box. And I mean, I don't think he's the solution to right back, but given how Bellerin's been this season, I'd be more than happy to see Chambers run with it until he either loses it or something else gets in the way.
That's fair enough. Daniel also asks, would Welbeck still fall down as much as he does? Would he still fall down as much as he does if gravity didn't exist?
To be fair, if Welbeck didn't fall down as often as he does, I would love him significantly less. Like, the more time... There's a definite kind of correlation between the time he spends on the floor and the amount of love that I have for that player. it's the same correlation as the number of shots that he fluffs and the amount of love that I have for the player. It's almost the worse he is, the better he is. I just think he's... He might be my favourite Arsenal player purely because of all the kind of... the crapness that surrounds him, and then he'll kind of every now and then he'll just kind of transform into this absolute beast and just shrug off 2 defenders and, you know, play the pass through to Mkhitaryan or something. But it's the kind of dichotomy of such brilliance and such kind of bewilderment that is just incredible. I love him. He's amazing.
What do you think, Josh?
No, he still would fall down as much. I mean, he's just that's just who he is. It's as Andy said, if he did it any less, he wouldn't be Danny Welbeck. I mean, that's just kind of his mantra as a player, and that's why we love him, because he's such a klutz and such a beast. It's amazing.
I mean, if you get the chance, to anyone listening, if you get the chance, try and find the clip of him towards the end of the game driving towards the goal.
Absolutely.
Just try and find that clip. But sticking with Danny Welbeck, Leo asks, how did you feel about his performance overall? We'll start with myself first, actually, because I've been banging this drum for a few weeks. I've said for a few weeks that he is never going to be your complete natural goal scorer. I've always said that he is an incredibly honest individual. He's a physical specimen who has value as a role player within a squad. And I think last night just goes to show, on a good day, that is what Danny Welbeck can give you. It might not be on a consistent weekly basis, but let's be honest, he's not going to play on a weekly basis. So I have no issues with Danny Welbeck. Everyone, I can understand this ideal of he's not good enough from a technical standpoint. I would agree to an extent, but he's not going to play. Sometimes you need these grafters, if you will, in the team in order to give it that edge, if you will, in tough games. And I would deem a game away at the San Siro a tough game.
Yeah, and you saw the same thing happen when he was at United under Ferguson, where, especially in the Champions League, he would always play Danny Welbeck as the lone striker if he wanted to play a counter-attacking style. I remember they played, I think it was Real Madrid, and he played up front, and he missed that absolute stinker where he tried to chip it over the keeper and it went wide. And in typical Danny Welbeck fashion, he went for some elaborate finish and it completely failed. But his overall performance, similar to last night, was one of real effort. And he just made life extremely difficult for both centre-halves, even though he was fairly isolated and on his own. He won free kicks. He stretched the game into the channels. Mm. He was just annoying. He's an annoying player to play against.
Yeah.
And because he's so annoying, he demands attention. And that creates space for the likes of Wilshere and Ramsey and Meza and so on, so on forth to go and work their magic in those deeper areas.
Yeah, I thought he was really good too. One thing I don't get is, you know, we understand that his feet are terrible and he's probably not going to score many goals with them, but I don't know why we don't try more aerial stuff with him, especially on set pieces. He doesn't seem to ever be the target. Not that our set pieces are ever so good that I can identify who the target is. But I don't know why we don't try more often to get him involved in the air whenever he's such a strong, athletic guy that I really do think he could establish something there. But, I mean, this just kind of fits into the whole when Arsenal have non-aerial strikers, they always try aerial, you know, they always try to send crosses in the air. And whenever they've got Welbeck or Giroud in there, they avoid it. It doesn't make sense to me, but no, it was a great performance. I was really happy for him because he's got to feel good about that. Like Andy said, he was such an annoyance to that defense.
I think it speaks volumes that two of the greatest football minds of our generation, Sir Alex Ferguson and Wenger, trust him so much. I've always said that if he gives you 10 goals a season, that's great. He's got 5 so far this season. Granted, you'd want more from him, but if he gives you 10 goals a season, you're laughing. You'd take that every single day. But Leo also asks, he was also asking about Kolasinac's injury. It looks like he might miss this weekend's game. But Ainsley Maitland-Niles did quite well when he came on, I thought. He was composed with the ball. My one issue with him is that he's so composed and it's almost to a fault.
Yeah, he's sometimes too composed, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, his athleticism is brilliant for a fullback and it's more than adequate, but that's my only issue with him. What do you guys think on Kolasinac, who I thought was a bit shaky to start with? I still have questions regarding his defensive athleticism in terms of quickness and ability to turn. But going forward, he's so natural and gives us such a great outlet on that left-hand side. What do you think, Josh?
I mean, Kolasinac, I guess he's more of a confident player than I originally thought. But I think he's steadily working back to being in his top form. And for the start of the season, he was absolutely in top form. He was an early front runner for our player of the season with how well he was doing. He was scoring goals. He was assisting. He looked unstoppable. And then that injury got in the way and Monreal took his job. And since then, he's just looked like a wreck. But I he wasn't perfect out there. He wasn't one of our best performers. But I think it was a really good step towards getting him back to his best, which is going to be a problem if he's hurt again and can't follow up on that. But no, I have faith in Maitland-Niles. I think he's had enough of a layoff since his horrible debacle against Bournemouth, and hopefully he can put that behind him and carry on with this, since we really don't have any other option right now.
I thought Kolasinac was terrible for about 15 minutes. I thought it was really, really bad when he got absolutely skinned by, I think it was Suso, was it, where he kind of shimmied and then knocked it through his legs, and Kolasinac was like, where the hell has the ball gone? I've no idea where he is. And there were a couple of other moments where he went herring into challenges and just got completely outmaneuvered, and I was like, oh, this is a rough Kolasinac game. But actually, as the game progressed, he got better and better and better, especially going forward. He adds a real, not just a power and pace, but he's really willing to be direct. He just drives. With or without the ball, his primary focus is, can I get to that byline and can I whip a crossing? Whether that be when he's dribbling or whether that be as an overlapping run and someone can feed him in. I think getting in behind the opposing defence is something that Arsenal really struggle with. They very rarely have the ability to get in behind, and that's something that Kolasinac offers from those late overlapping runs. Defensively, I still have issues. I can definitely see why Wenger thinks he's a wing back and not a left back. There are clear signs that he's far more suited to a wing back role than a left back role. And I think against a short, snappy, sharp winger, I could see him having some real troubles. His acceleration is shocking. His turning circle is very, very slow. But he got better, and I think Josh is right. You saw the confidence seep through this team, and I think it was emblematic in him that he got better and better as the game went on, and hopefully his knock doesn't see him out for more than a game or two, because really it would be nice to see him get a run of games, especially while Monreal's still recovering from his back injury.
Yeah, I mean, Leo says that he feels that Kolasinac was possibly rushed back, but did you want to add something to what Andy was saying, Josh?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I just enjoy having Kolasinac out there, because I feel like a mean team again, because he's such... I mean, anytime he goes into a tackle and there's any question at all, I'm just like, I will throw everything I own behind Kolasinac winning this fight, because that's just how he is. I think there was one point where Kolasinac and Xhaka were both up in the face of the ref, and I was like, I love this. I absolutely love everything about this, and I don't want it to ever end.
They certainly give us an edge, don't they? They give us a Bosnian edge. I mean, I know they're not both Bosnian, but they're both from that
close
neck
enough
of the woods, and they've both got the
East
black
European
hair. And
a little bit of generalization from Hendrick.
Yeah,
there.
I apologize. I sincerely apologize.
But no, you are right. Certainly, I mean, certainly just in terms of stature, Kolasinac is an absolute beast. Like, I would not want to pick a fight with him. But also, he does have that, and Xhaka does as well. When they go into tackles, they don't kind of flimsy their way into tackles. They really kind of commit wholeheartedly. And sometimes that's actually an issue, because they can get kind of outmaneuvered by a sharper attacker. But actually, for an Arsenal team that is traditionally extremely vulnerable when they tackle people, these two are very, very strong and very sturdy.
I liked your point about the wing-back comments of Arsene Wenger's, Andy, simply because early in the season I was very defensive. I thought, oh no, he's playing so well. And I think I was blinded slightly by his offensive output and not necessarily his defensive work. But I completely agree. I agree more and more now, simply because whilst I think he can improve, not the quickness, obviously, I mean, that can be improved, but there are always going to be players. Bernardo Silva's goal immediately comes to mind. I mean, granted, it's a fantastic goal, but he stops on a dime and Kolasinac is still going the other way. I mean, I'm not sure whether Monreal could have done any better or whether anyone could have done any better for that matter. But, and also to add to the Xhaka Kolasinac thing, one thing that I was really, really happy about when both players arrived was, they've got a reputation of being nasty. And that's something that we lacked for a few years. Granted, the Xhaka thing hasn't quite worked out in that mould of the nasty Vieira, Gilberto Silva type. But I like having that nasty edge in the team every once in a while. I don't mind someone giving the opposition player a good kick if they deserve it or when we're on the break. I don't mind it at all. But hey-ho, I'm sure we'll live to regret that statement at some point when we're 2-1 down and Xhaka gets sent off for hacking someone down on the break.
Why you got to pick on Xhaka? Why can't you say Kolasinac?
But there are no more questions, guys. I mean, there are few... Well, there are people who are happy that we simply won, but yeah, I'm happy too. I don't really...
I don't blame him.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I was as surprised as anybody.
Well, let's transition slightly then. I know, Josh... And this is a topic that I want to talk about as well, so I'll give you the floor firstly. The midfield three of Ramsey, Xhaka and Wilshere. We three have been banging on about this for years, wanted to see this midfield three in action. And I think I'm right in saying this is the first time that, as a central midfield, this is the first time that all three have played together. So what did you make of it?
I think it was everything we could have dreamed of and more, which kind of scares me because it set the precedent so high. Like, I don't know what more they could have done as a collective three than what they did. I mean, whenever there's unanimous praise, almost near unanimous praise for Xhaka, Ramsey in the after the same game on Arsenal social media, that's an intimidating prospect because these are two of the most criticized guys, probably the two most criticized guys in our squad. But I mean, you could just see the mechanics of how it worked, and it was kind of what we thought would happen, was if you flank Xhaka, who's this unathletic guy, with two guys that are box-to-box, very athletic, it's going to work. It's going to work in the sense that, and I think this helped Colin Chambers too, because Ramsey often covered for Chambers' run forward also. He got back and played right back. When you have two engines like that, it occupies so much of the opposing defense and midfield, because they're doing so much more than just playing midfield. They're playing on the wings. They're playing central midfield. They're playing the number 10 role. They're flowing in and out. And in exchange, Xhaka can just sit there. And he's got all the space in the world. And he can just pick out his passes, which, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum, too. When you give Xhaka time, he's fantastic. It's under pressure that the questions really start to arise. But if you don't get that pressure, then there's nothing to worry about. And again, this is why I'm saying that I worry that they set the precedent too high, because I agree that AC Milan did give them space, but a lot of that went down to them not having a choice. They had to pick and choose who they could cover because they didn't have the speed to keep up with us. But I do worry if it'll still translate to the Premier League, and I hope we can see it against Watford, because I think that would be a really good a good encore to follow it up with, because they are a kind of physical, athletic, nasty kind of team. And if our midfield is going to work, it's going to have to work against teams like that. So I'm optimistic that this is the way forward. And I do think that if this midfield can continue to be like that, there's no reason. I mean, we still want to add players that can fill those roles, especially with the injury risk. But I mean, I was thrilled with it. I couldn't have been happier. And now I just hope that this can be a continued thing for them.
I was just going to say, before you mentioned it just then, I was so surprised that they didn't press Xhaka, simply because I was adamant that on tape they would have identified him being under pressure as a massive weakness of ours. Because he's, as you said, when he has the opportunity to turn, get his head up and play the passes between the lines, very good, fine. But I think we established last night that if Xhaka ever leaves Arsenal, the Serie A is probably a good place for him to go.
I will say, I don't think they had a choice to pressure Xhaka, because they had five guys coming at them at any given time, and Xhaka was kind of the deepest as the sixth man. So they had to either defend those five guys with what they had, or they could press up to cover Xhaka. And I don't think it would have been practical for them. I mean, maybe they stick one guy on him, but I have faith in Xhaka to be able to beat one guy. I think this was all a product of the system that Arsene Wenger put in place of, if we have enough people going forward, they won't have enough eyes on Xhaka, which will give him space.
I think both are true. I mean, Gattuso is a traditional Italian manager. There's a reason why Milan is so good defensively, is because that's what he focuses on and that's what he prioritises. And a lot of that is sitting deep and compacting the space rather than pressing opponents. They don't. Italian teams don't really implement a high press. It's just not in their culture. It's not in their DNA. I think if Man City were to play last night, they would still have pressed Xhaka, even with the system that Wenger played. Having said that, the system that Wenger did play still prevented Milan from pressing, even if they would have wanted to. I think both can be true. There was an element of Milan just not implementing that type of style because that's not in their DNA, and there was an element of Wenger's system preventing that from being possible because of the presence of Wilshere, Mkhitaryan and Ozil and Ramsey, all as these free roaming midfielders, and they were all drifting inside, outside, forwards and backwards, and they were very difficult to keep tabs on.
I think that's a very good point. The fact that we were so fluid up there and the fact that we could push their defensive line back and their midfielders further back, I think obviously helped. And obviously I think credit also has to go to Danny Welbeck for not only being willing to work the channels but also being willing to hold the ball up at times and then just bring the ball forward, allow everyone to step up. I thought that was really important in the context of things as well. But I think it was spoke volumes to me that they played, naturally Wilshere played as the number 10, and they had Ramsey in the more natural position of his, of being a box-to-box player, yeah. Which I think is the best way to look at it if you're going to play them in that kind of three anyway, simply because I'm concerned because of Wilshere's injury history, and even though Ramsey has a decorated injury history as well, I'm more comfortable with his fitness and his industry. And I think that if you're going to play those three moving forward, that's how you need to play it. But I see someone else coming in order to play alongside Xhaka next season.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do think it's worth pointing out that this midfield worked very well, and I actually thought Wilshere individually didn't play that well. Mm. I thought he had his moments here and there, but he lost the ball cheaply on a few occasions. He hung on to it every now and then when really he should have just released it quickly. And he didn't quite look as sharp as he has done in the last few weeks. But nonetheless, the collective, the unit, still worked well. And I thought, well, I don't think Wilshere was bad. He just wasn't as good as he has been. And even with that being the case, Arsenal still looked like a cohesive unit, which is, I guess, a testament to the system and a testament to the complementary elements that each player has. They all bring a different aspect that fits in as a machine, essentially. They all fit together nicely. And I think the floating of Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil also made quite a big difference because it allowed Arsenal to overload the central areas and essentially just control the game, especially in the first half, just control the game whenever they had the ball, because they just won the numbers battle, essentially. And obviously, Kolasinac and Chambers provided the width.
While you mention Ozil, I thought he was actually quite quiet last night, and that he comes up with the two assists, and I thought he worked very well from a defensive standpoint as well. But Mkhitaryan was awarded Man of the Match, and he wasn't anything. Is it just me that thought he wasn't special? I mean, I thought he played well, but I didn't think he was Man of the Match.
I think that he was our everything going forward. He kind of reminds me of the perfect blend between Ozil and Alexis, where he's got this effort, but it's not a blind effort where you're just chasing around blindly looking for something. And you're also, he's got the creative, not the same level of creativity as Ozil, but the same style. But he's obviously got a higher work rate than Ozil. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. He got my Man of the Match too. I think that the one thing he does really well is he takes the spotlight away from Ozil, and I think that's what we really need, because Ozil, you know, for 3 years now, we've wanted him to step up and sort of be a bigger presence, but that's really not who he is. He needs to sort of hide a bit, for lack of a better word. He needs to just sort of disappear like he did against AC Milan and
camouflage.
Just pop up when he's needed.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Mkhitaryan provides that for him, because he's really everywhere on the pitch at times. He doesn't stop, and he's got so many threats. He can score goals, and he can create pretty consistently that Ozil can kind of just sit in his shadow and hang out until he's really needed. And to me, that's the greatest thing that Mkhitaryan brings, aside from his skill level, is just pulling the attention away from Ozil, which is something I think Alexis did well whenever he was in his prime, but that didn't last very long. So, no, I think he was great. I think he deserved man of the match.
I think the two complement each other very well, because Mkhitaryan is just brilliantly busy, isn't he? He's just very, very busy player, whereas Ozil will have these moments of brilliance, but they're quite rare, and they'll kind of fleet in and out of the game every now and then, and he might go missing for 5 minutes, and then he'll suddenly pop up with this exquisite pass or something. Like when as soon as Arsenal won the ball back for the first goal, I was screaming, saying, "Pass it to Mkhitaryan, pass it to Mkhitaryan." I think it was Ramsey or Wiltshire who initially got the ball. It might have been Ramsey. I was like, "Pass it to Mkhitaryan, pass it to Mkhitaryan," because that was where the space was. And obviously, you can see that far easier on the TV than you can when you're in the game and you've got the pace of the game and you've just won the ball back and you're a bit excited. He passes it inside to Mesut Ozil, and Ozil knew. He didn't even take a touch.
Didn't even look.
Didn't even look. He knew exactly where the space was. He knew exactly who was there. First time pass, bang, straight to Mkhitaryan.
In his stride,
because
as
he
well.
He knew that that was where the ball needed to go, and he knew it needed to go there quickly. And that is just an individual moment of brilliance. Whereas Mkhitaryan, it is just a far busier player. I don't think he has those same moments of truly outstanding play where you're like, "Oh gosh, I can't believe he's just done that. That's unbelievable." But I think consistently he will always influence the game, whether it be in his work rate, whether it be in his distribution, whether it be just in the number of shots that he gets on goal. He's just a far busier player than Ozil is, and the two complement each other well.
I would agree, but I do want to add that Mkhitaryan, for me, his moments of brilliance are whenever he's got the ball in tight spaces. He is so good at stopping and turning, and I mean, on his goal and on the shot that hit the crossbar that should have been a goal, he did essentially the same thing both times, where he just stopped with it, turned, the defense kept going, and he had a wide open attempt at goal. And I think that's where he's going to have his moments of brilliance, whereas Ozil's, I mean, you mentioned his first goal, but the second goal was, it was set, he made it look so easy, and there was nothing about it that was easy. You had to see everything happening before it happened, and it was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I do. One concern I do have with the system that was played was the lack of width, or the I think it was okay yesterday, but I think there could be a danger that Arsenal become an extremely narrow team. If you put Ramsey, Wiltshire, Mkhitaryan, and Mesut Ozil all in the same team, you're asking to be a narrow team. Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil aren't natural wingers, and whether they can get away with that or not, I'm not sure. Again, you look at the brilliance of City is that they give David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne so much space to work in, because they have Leroy Sané stood on one chalk line and Raheem Sterling stood on the other chalk line, and they make the pitch massive. If Arsenal have Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil as their two wingers, they make the pitch small, which means that they have to play well to score goals, because space is just so limited. And it was fine yesterday, but moving forward, it could be an issue that is worth keeping an eye on.
One thing I would say to that, though, is we've played with this kind of system for a long time with these kind of inverted wingers. Our fullbacks have long been our source of width. You go back to the days of Sami and Nasri, he was always looking to play inside as well. And that was, going back to Callum Chambers just momentarily, that's one of the reasons why I thought he had a better game. Because as I said to you in preparation for this episode, while Suso was on the other side, Calhanoglu naturally, I think, wants to come inside and get involved in the play in the middle of the park. So I think that benefited Chambers last night. One thing I also wanted to discuss with you, I saw a lot of discussion on Twitter post-match that Ospina should start over Cech now as our number one. And I couldn't understand it, because there were still those moments where I honestly had my heart in my mouth going, "What on earth are you doing? Or why on earth haven't you come to claim that?" I just can't understand it. There's a mistake in that man, and it's not far around the corner.
Yeah.
He had his problems. I will say late on, he settled into the game and made two really good decisions in the second half. One to stop a goal, and the other one whenever he claimed a cross, which he made look remarkably easy. And I just thought, why don't you just do this all the time? You'd be fantastic. But there's, like you said, there's always, anytime he's called into action, I'm always thinking, when's he going to hesitate? Because as soon as he hesitates, that's when he loses his. I mean, that's the same with any keeper. Once you hesitate, you're kind of screwed because you didn't stay put and you didn't go for it. You're kind of caught in the dead zone. And Ospina just has permanent residence in the dead zone, and he really needs to figure out how to do what he did in the second half, but every day, because then he'd be a fantastic keeper.
I'm not sure whether this has any meaning, whether this has any real significant meaning, but I think it's his small stature that really contributes to his lack of prowess in terms of claiming crosses and set pieces as such. Simply because I'm not exactly tall how tall he is, but he's certainly no Petr Cech in terms of stature. But
no, and he's relatively slight as well. It's not like he's big, stocky guy. He's fairly small, and he's not exactly a physical specimen either.
I mean, it bodes well for him in terms of reflexes and his shot-stopping ability, but I'm sure that Skodran Mustafi is glad that it was Ospina that clattered into him yesterday, not Matt Macy or Petr Cech.
Yeah. I think Gary Neville sums it up when he was watching the Carabao Cup final. He just makes you nervous.
Yeah.
You just every time the ball comes near him, you just ask the question, what's he gonna do?
He's gonna bring that South American spice.
Yeah, and that for me, that's the worst thing that a goalkeeper can do.
Bring the South American spice. Played...
just nervousness. Because I've played centre half quite a lot, and having a keeper who you do not trust is absolutely, it's disgusting. It's truly horrible, because any time the ball goes near him,
you feel the need
you don't know what to do. It makes you try and do more because you don't trust your goalkeeper. Having a goalkeeper who you trust and rely on, like a Petr Cech, even if he's made a few mistakes recently, if you hear Petr Cech say keepers and he's coming out, you get out the way. You know he's going to come and get that ball. If Ospina comes and says keepers, you still go and head that ball because you just don't trust him to grab the ball. And I would much rather have a keeper who inspires confidence in his defenders rather than I would rather have a worse keeper who his defenders trust than a better keeper who his defenders don't trust. And I'm not saying that Ospina is a better keeper than Cech, but that is the position that Ospina is in. He doesn't inspire trust in anybody at all. And that's why it's ridiculous to say that he should start over Cech. Absolutely ridiculous. I think I could name 20 goalkeepers in the Premier League that I'd rather have starting than David Ospina. I really could. And he's better than a lot of them, but he just makes me nervous. Like, he just has a mistake in him, and I just don't want that between the sticks at all. I just don't want it near the pitch.
I'm laughing simply because this sounds like the Granit Xhaka rant that Josh went on a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't want him. I don't want it.
Yeah. What was he doing? You know when he came out for the penalty? Or what?
That was not a penalty. You didn't touch him anyway. It wasn't a penalty.
No, right. No, you see, I have a point on this, right?
Oh, no.
And this isn't related to diving. This isn't related to Arsenal, rather. Diving will not stop unless those types of situations are given as penalties. Because if I'm Calhanoglu or however you pronounce his name.
Just call it Calhanoglu.
Yeah, if I'm that free kick wizard dude, right, and Ospina comes out at my feet and he's going for the ball, I'm going down. I am leaving my trail leg, I'm kicking him and I'm going down and I'm winning the penalty. That is a dive. And that will not happen. You'll not stop that from happening until situations like that are given as penalties. That should be a penalty. By the laws, it isn't a penalty, but it should be a penalty. And it's all because Ospina is stupid. What's he doing?
He hesitated. Like I said, this
yeah,
is,
no, he did.
As
he did,
soon as you hesitate, you're screwed. And he's the king of hesitation back there. He kind of just, you know, you make a good point about not having that communication. I feel like he's just sort of his own entity, and he's just going to be that way. Whereas Petr Cech, when he's back there, is part of a unit. He's part of the defense. Ospina's not. He's on his own.
He's a maverick. He's most certainly
that's the exact word I was going for. He's a maverick.
It's as if he forgets it's a team sport. He just thinks it's an okay, individual Andy, competition about how
now,
wild he can be. And I think it was in the second half, when he passed it to Koscielny. When
he should have sent somebody, it. He should have cleared
somebody, it. Somebody passed it back to him, and that was the wrong decision, firstly. But then when he gets the ball, he should just put his foot through it. I think there's about 10 minutes left. Just boot it, man. Don't do anything stupid. Just put your foot through it and clear it as far as possible. And instead, he plays like this risky 10-yard pass to Koscielny on the edge of his box. I'm going, what are you doing?
At least he's got, like a Cojones.
Yeah. He does. He does. I do, before we'll wrap up Milan in a minute because we've been going on for quite a while. But there's one more topic that I want to talk about, and that's the defence in general. Specifically, I actually want to talk about it negatively in the sense that for the first 10-15 minutes, Arsenal defended very badly. Like, they did not. Milan could have scored. They could have been 2 or 3 nil up in 15 yeah. minutes. Like, that's not ridiculous to say. And while we should be willing to praise Arsenal for their performance overall, a big caveat should be given that I think Gattuso knew that if they scored an early goal, Arsenal would absolutely crumble because that happens every time. And they went for the jugular early on. Like, they were like, let's just get them, let's just go. And Arsenal nearly fell to pieces and they just hung on. And then Mkhitaryan scored and that goal changed the game. You saw the confidence just seep through Arsenal from that point. But defensively, there were issues early on. And in the second half, I thought they were very good. They were excellent. I thought Mustafi and Koscielny's second half were very, very good. But if Milan had scored, I think this would have been a very, very different game.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, you're right. I mean, we played well, but they still had three chances or at least three instances where you were on the edge of your seat going, no. But I thought Mustafi was quiet, which is the best kind of Mustafi that you can ask for.
That's good.
And
yeah, that's
I thought
good.
That Koscielny put in a captain's performance, especially in the second half. Even Rob Holding, when he came on, the first thing he did was block a shot from a corner. I thought, fine, well done, get your minutes in. But I thought the communication was much better second half. Obviously, especially on that right-hand side, we seem to have some communication breakdowns early between Mustafi and Chambers. But it seemed that those issues were ironed out by about half an hour. And as I was saying to Josh before we started, it was the right kind of boring in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Are we there, fellas? Is there anything else you want to talk about regarding Milan?
No, I want to talk about Troy Deeney.
You're talking about Troy Deeney. Right then, we will take a short break. And when we come back, we will discuss Arsenal's game against Watford on Sunday in the most important competition of the season. We'll see you in just a sec. Hello and welcome back to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew and with Henry and Josh as usual. And we are looking forward to Sunday's home match against Watford. It is a 1:30 kickoff and to be honest, I don't really care about it. But there we go. Josh, are you any more moved than I am?
I am moved because any time I get to watch Arsenal potentially play well, especially after what they've been doing lately, I am quite moved and I have faith. Maybe this is typical of what Arsenal can do to someone. I see them play well once, and now I believe everything's different, and we'll never see them lose again. Although I do have a lot of confidence that they will win this. So
that is a good point you made there. Arsenal fans have an incredible ability to assume that the anomaly is the norm. Just because the anomaly is a good thing, they're like, oh, that must be normal. Here we go then.
No, it was normal 10-15 years ago.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I feel like they base all of their opinion off of what's happened most recently, and I'm completely guilty of this. When they lose, I'm like, oh, it's over. We're done for. And when we win, I'm like, oh yeah, we're just gonna win everything. It's okay.
Yeah, recency bias is at well and large in among the Arsenal cognoscenti.
What a word. What a
Henry,
word.
Henry, do you care about this game?
Of course I care, but then I don't care. I mean, as we've said, the Europa League is our priority, and it has been for a while now. I'd like to see us win. I don't really want to finish 7th or 8th. I don't really want to drop to the depths of Liverpool Football Club.
Although, if Arsenal weren't to win the Europa League, I would rather see them finish 7th than 6th.
I think. Why? What's the difference?
Because then they wouldn't be in Europe at all.
I think they're already in Europe simply because of the...
Oh, they are, aren't they? Because of Carling Cup.
I think they already have an entrance into it anyway, I think. I'm not entirely sure.
No, the Carling Cup... Well, the Carling Cup winners go in, but obviously City are going to be in the Champions League, so we would go into the Europa League.
Does it work in a similar fashion in, like, the Europa League? So if, like, Atletico Madrid finish in, like, a Champions League place in the Liga, and we meet them in the final, does that mean that we automatically get, like, a place in the Champions League qualification? Or...
I hope so, because we're not.
That would be
beat
brilliant.
The final.
Just like you turn up to the final and you're already guaranteed a place in the Champions League. So that's probably
know.
Stan Kroenke's
dream.
I get money and I get more money. It doesn't matter whether I win or lose.
Yeah, the same could be said for Dortmund, or even Leipzig or something.
Lazio possibly as well.
Remember that time we were talking about Watford?
Sorry.
Yeah, this is how much me and Henry care about the Watford game. We started talking about what happens if we finish second in the Europa League to some specific European team.
I mean, I was just going to say, I've mentioned this a few episodes back, I wouldn't be surprised if from now on we play a weaker side in the Premier League and keep our strongest lineup for the Europa League. Much like Manchester United did towards the end of last season. I think that might not actually be a bad thing because you would actually get to see, it might not be completely fair, but you could evaluate certain players better in terms of, are they capable of playing for this club at this level moving forward?
I think that's a wonderful idea and it makes a whole lot of sense, which is why I think Arsene Wenger won't do that. I think I think he still has pipe dreams of getting
top
higher
four.
Up in the table. And I think that means that he's going to keep playing. I mean, of course, I say that, and he did rest Aaron Ramsey against Brighton to have him against AC Milan. So I could see him doing it in small doses, but I would not expect him to send out like half a team of kids and the rest kind of rotational players in the Premier League. He's too prideful of a guy to do that, especially in the Premier League.
I mean, we're going to see some changes, I expect, anyway. I'd expect Maitland-Niles to start at one of the fullback positions. Aubameyang is likely to come straight back in as well. Whether we risk Ramsey and Wilshere again, considering how injury-prone they are, we might see Elneny or Iwobi come in. I mean, Mertesacker started the last game against Watford, didn't he? I mean, he just can't get a game. I find it so weird that a club captain just hasn't played this year at all. It's just...
I don't think I would rotate for this game.
I agree in theory
that Arsenal should play a weakened team. The reason is, Arsenal only have two more games in March. They play this game on Sunday. They then play Milan on Thursday, which
and then
is the
it's
15th
an FA Cup
of March.
It's the FA Cup weekend next weekend,
which they would be playing Leicester, but they've got a quarter final in the FA Cup, and they're not playing in the FA Cup, so that game's not on. And then you've got an international break. So their next game is actually not until April. It's the 1st of April where they play Stoke, which is another home game in the Premier League. And then the Europa League quarterfinals, if they make it, will be the first Thursday in April. I think it's like the 4th or something. So actually, Arsenal aren't playing that many games. They're going to have a stacked April because they've already played fewer games in the Premier League. They will have played fewer games in the Premier League once they miss the Leicester weekend. So they're going to have a really rammed April, especially if they make it through to the semi-finals of the Europa League. But for March, they don't actually have that many games to kind of navigate. So I wouldn't really make that many changes for Sunday. Obviously, if players are tired or if they've got a knock or something like that, then you rest them and you save them for Thursday. But in terms of your regular starters who played every game and are fine, your likes of Mustafi, even Koscielny, Xhaka, Ramsey probably, those type of players, I don't have an issue. Ozil's and your Mkhitaryans, I'd play them all because after Milan, they're going to have 2.5 weeks off. Obviously, some of them will be playing internationally, but really, this is a fairly light period of the fixture schedule for Arsenal.
I mean, I hope Ramsey doesn't travel with Wales to China because that would really put a spanner in our works. But Yeah, you make a good point. I was unaware of their fixture list, but if that's the case, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I definitely agree later in the season, especially if they start drawing some... if they draw Borussia Dortmund in the quarterfinals, then they're going to have to throw all their resources at that game, because that's going to be a very tough win. Mm-hmm. Mm. Or even if they draw, you know, like a Madrid or a Leipzig or whoever it may be. But I think for now, they can get away with playing the strongest team.
I know we're playing Watford on the weekend, but I'd love to see us, touch wood, if we progress through in this, if we could progress past AC Milan, I'd love to see Wenger go up against Marseille because of the history that he has against Marseille. I'd love it. I would love it.
Well, I would, apart from we'd lose.
Do you think so?
Yeah, Arsenal will lose.
What,
all the
Dimitri Payet would come and back and haunt us all?
So you watch them go into AC Milan and win, and then you say, oh, we're going to lose no matter what.
Yeah, I have no hope. I just have no hope. On Watford, are you scared, Josh, by Troy Deeney and his sizable cojones?
Troy Deeney is so incredibly irrelevant that I just love that he keeps talking. It's hilarious. It's like he's faded from the spectrum at Watford. He doesn't even play that often. When he does, he didn't play that well. And he's still drawing off, and it's like, dude, shut up. You're irrelevant. It'd be like a Per Mertesacker with shit-talking other teams. Like, you're not even playing. Stop talking.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, Troy Deeney would win in a fight. Per Mertesacker, while he's big, would not win in a fight because he'd just fall over his own feet while trying to hit somebody.
Or while trying to turn around.
Yeah, trying to get out of the way of a punch, you just deck it. In all seriousness, do Watford scare you? Obviously, they beat us last time, and away from home, I think Arsenal are a very different prospect to what they are at home. But Henry, do Watford scare you on Sunday, or are you fairly confident?
They don't scare me, but I want to put one over on them simply because that was such a... that was such a big game for us in terms of a lot of people look back at that game and they can say that's just another poor performance from Arsenal where we were in control and then it was lapses of concentration and we lost the game. I mean, it was stereotypical Arsenal for the last 10 years or so. I want to get one over on them this season not to indicate that the time has changed, but I just want to get one over on them just for my personal or our personal self-esteem.
Yeah, I also think the confidence in this dressing room, while they have won one game, is still extremely fragile.
Yeah.
And if they were to drop an egg on Sunday and get out-muscled and bullied by Watford and lose 1-0, that would not put them in a good state heading into the second leg against Milan on Thursday. Having said that, if Arsenal go and win 2-3, 4-0 and they begin to play their fluid football again and they begin to... You know, they kind of have that swagger. They start brimming, don't they, when they really start playing well. Mm. If they start getting that, say, in the second half on Sunday, then that sets them up perfectly for Thursday, which now is, you know, like we said, the Europa League is the priority. So if Arsenal can enter that game in good form, then I'm all for it.
Maybe I'm being naive about this, but even for me, this is saying a lot. I have zero concerns about Watford because I don't see how... I know I'm saying this like... I'm searching for concerns, and I really don't have any because Watford doesn't scare me. I agree that I think our confidence is still a little shaky, but I'm sorry. If you go into AC Milan, to the San Siro, you win so conclusively, and then next up is Watford, who have taunted you at your home ground, I think we have a bit more moral fiber than to lay an egg in this one. I don't use moral fiber.
I don't.
I'm biting my tongue so hard.
So I agree with you completely that Watford don't scare me. Arsenal scare me. That's the issue.
But this happens every year where we turn it around about this time.
That's true. No, that's
and
true.
And we talked about this last podcast. I forget who was it that said it against in the Brighton game. They said, well, it's just a matter of time not before Arsenal turn around. It's going to happen. And I think it's happened. I think that turnaround has happened because when you look at the team that played against Brighton and then you look at the contrast against AC Milan, it's literally like somebody flipped a switch and all of a sudden the pretty much the same personnel. It's just everything looked better. And if that, I don't see why that would change going to Wild Card. I feel like the switch is still flipped, and we're going to look like the team that we always thought we could be. And everything that happened in January and February is going to seem like some distant memory and some different team, even though it's the exact same team and nobody understands it any more than they did before. But this is just the team that we deal with.
I mean, you are right. This is the annual Arsenal cycle where they offer hope early on. It doesn't go very well. They then make a bit of a recovery. Then they enter the pit of despair around late January, early February, get battered by Bayern Munich, and then they make another recovery towards the end of the year. And we're just at the shoots of that recovery, aren't we? We're at the beginning. And I agree. I actually expect Arsenal to go and win this game fairly handily. I think Wenger's going to play a strong team, and I think they're going to play well. I just am wary of the possibility that if Arsenal don't play well and Watford get an early goal, or if just something goes wrong, this team is still on, you know, they're still on that edge of capitulating, because mentally they're just soft. They're just very soft mentally. And I think if they face any element of controversy or any element of difficulty or any element of persecution from the Watford players or whatever, or the atmosphere in the Emirates can be very toxic if they go one down, it just wouldn't surprise me if they fold again. Having said that, I don't... No, go on.
I was going to say, it actually would surprise me. Because, again, I keep wanting to say maybe I'm being naive, but I don't... I get that this is a team that is mentally weak, but they do have some players in there that have fight, that have spirit, that are mentally strong. I don't know why that hasn't caught on lately, or prior to AC Milan. I don't know why they've been so fragile and so pathetic. But... I don't know. I'm running out of things to back this up with other than just pure speculation. I don't think that they're going to fall back on that mental deficiency, I guess you could say, where they're just living in their own heads, scared of themselves. I don't think that that's going to come back out this season. And again, I'm basing this on God knows what. They've only won one game. And here I am saying that they're not going to fall back on losing their confidence. But I don't know. I feel like that part of the season is behind us, and we're into the part where they're convincing all of us that they're going to be just fine, which is a lie, but I'm going to fall for it.
I mean, supposedly there are still plenty of tickets available for the game. So, I mean, I think the fans also know that the Premier League is a dead rubber now at this point in the season, but I just kind of want to get it done. I want to get to AC Milan next Thursday, and I just want to make sure that that's confirmed when we're through, and then I can breathe easy for a couple of weeks and then have no Arsenal stress.
It would be the most
Don't say it in the world
if they threw it away on Thursday night. It would be...
But that was my worry. I was like, that was the one thing. We should have scored more, and we know what happened against Östersunds. Andy, it's going to happen now. I'm going to turn this straight back on you. When
it just would, though, wouldn't it? It would be peak Arsenal. They offer all this hope in such a brilliant performance, and then they snatch it all away in a disastrous evening.
My big concern is that they just play too defensively, because I could see Arsene Wenger saying, "All we got to do is defend this lead," which obviously is true, but there's a bit more to it than let's just absorb everything. So,
and Arsenal can't defend as well. So
I don't think we'd do that, though, because we've never done that. Let's be brutally honest. We've never done that.
Well, that's what we tried to do against Östersunds. We just kind of said, all right, we're not going to let them beat us.
And we'll just try and pick you off.
Yeah, and then it got kind of dicey. And I hope that Arsene Wenger, who... I don't know, Arsene Wenger's weird. Sometimes he proves that he can learn new things. Like, whenever he switched to the three at the back, I never thought in all of my wildest dreams that he would try a three at the back. Never. And he did it, and he stuck with it. Of course, he still wanted to go back to the back four. But I hope that he learned that you can't just sit back and trust in this defense. I really hope he learned that. And whether he did or not, like I said, it's always a crapshoot with him, but who knows?
Yeah. It just would be the pinnacle of Arsenal – fucking over their fans, their fans basically, wouldn't it? We talk about Arsenal being this Arsenal being this kind of comedic experiment. Well, this would just be the final act, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're drawing to a close, really, aren't we?
Yeah. Do we want to do score predictions for Watford? Because I
Go on then. Yeah, go on then.
I'm going to say 4-0, which
yeah,
I'm
actually kill him, kill him.
I'm actually less surprised. I will be less surprised that they score 4 goals, and more surprised that they didn't give one up, which will give Petrček his 200th clean sheet.
He's 200. Did you see the stat about Ospina?
He's had three since Cech's last one.
He's had three clean sheets since Cech's been on 199.
I wonder if Petrček has like forgotten that he's even on 199. It's been so long that I could see him just being like,
he definitely hasn't, because the commentators will not stop banging on about it. There's no way he could possibly forget that he's on 199. Henry, what do you reckon is going to happen?
I'll go 4-0. I'll join this train of optimism if it's stopping only temporarily.
I do see your logic. I think that Arsenal are more likely to win 3 or 4-0 than they are 1-0, if that makes sense. Just because I think if they score one, then the confidence will start flowing even more, and the football starts becoming, as Arsenal are known for. We'll see if that happens. I'll go for a 3-0. No, I won't. I'll go for a 3-1.
Oh,
Petter.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You're a mean one.
Yeah.
I do want to throw in that another reason I think it's going to be 4-0 is because Arsenal also does seem to play really well when nothing matters. And there's really nothing at stake in this match. So I could see them just being like, fuck it, let's go have fun. And they have a lot of fun.
And at home as well. Arsenal have been excellent at the Emirates this season. I know they're pants against Man City last week, but predominantly they've been very good at home, and this thankfully is at home, so yeah. I guess we'll have to see.
Indeedy.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody. My name's been Andrew, been with Josh and Henry as usual. You can find us on all the normal places, on Twitter and on paininthearsenal.com and wherever else you want to find us. Get in contact with us, leave us your questions. Let us know what you think of the show, however bad it is. Let us know how stupid Josh is. And we will see you, I assume, before the Milan game. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Nodding at the camera doesn't help, guys.
I said yes. I'm just trying to think through my university schedule, and I think I should be okay.
Wonderful. So we will see you after the Watford win, obviously, and before the inevitable Milan disaster on Thursday night.
No. Goodbye.